comes from the Brown Osterup Performing Arts Foundation, on the web at brownosterupfoundation.org. The WGTD Radio Theater, this coming Saturday morning at 11:15.
This is WGTD-HD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. In December of 2020, I did my first program about individuals who were in foster care during their childhoods and were attending college with the help of a UW system program called Fostering Success, which supports foster, homeless, or orphaned students. In the spring of 2024, we followed up that program by interviewing author, attorney, and foster youth advocate Andrew Bridge, along with some students and alumni who were supported by the Fostering Success program. I'll link to those prior programs on our Facebook post and in the Education Matters archives in case you'd like to listen to them. Today's discussion is a little bit of a follow-up on that. Last fall at UW-Eau Claire, there was a special event where Andrew attended, and these two other guests were there also. And also we're going to talk a little bit about an initiative called Guardian Scholars, which exists in other states and is designed to support students who have had foster care experiences at both two- and four-year colleges. So we're going to get into the experiences of students who aged out of foster care and then navigated college successfully, and how we could support them within colleges and maybe within state budgets, etc. So we have three guests today. I'm going to start with Andrew Bridge. He grew up in foster care from age 6 to 18. He went on to graduate from Wesleyan University on a full scholarship and then Harvard Law School. He is a children's rights lawyer who has worked with foster care systems across the country to improve lifetime outcomes for children in state care, including with colleges and universities to improve admissions and graduation rates for older foster youth and young adults. Welcome, Andrew.
It's good to be here. Thank you so much.
Olivia Johnston is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Stout and a proud alumna of the Fostering Success program. After becoming a ward of the state at age 12, she navigated her way through high school and college using her experiences to advocate for others and to mentor fellow students. She currently works in marketing for a software as a service company. Welcome, Olivia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And Abby Austin is a recent graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Stout with a BS in psychology and a concentration in criminal justice and rehabilitation. After being placed in foster care at age 14, she joined the Fostering Success program on campus to use her lived experience to improve the lives of students who experienced the same struggles that she did, while becoming a peer mentor and working on numerous Fostering Success camps to introduce higher education opportunities to those transitioning out of the Wisconsin system. Welcome, Abby.
Thanks for having me.
And what are you up to these days? I know you are graduated a while ago now.
I graduated back in December. I currently work for the Department of Corrections. I'm a probation and parole agent in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so here we are. So just as a general review and context for this program, Andrew, I wonder if you could start by telling us some basic information about youth in foster care and what typically happens when they turn 18.
So across the country, there are roughly 23,000 youth who leave foster care at age 18. Foster care professionals regard this as one of the very worst outcomes that can happen to a young person. What it means is that we have removed them from their family. We have not returned them to their family. We have not found a guardian for them. We have not found an adoptive home. They are entering adulthood, entering the world at age 18 on their own. So when it comes to young people who are entering college, we take a step back. Within that group, we're talking about young people who have found college on their own. They've applied to college on their own. They've gone ahead and they've filled out forms that will make them eligible for financial assistance on their own. And so really the decision is, after having done all that, do we want them to succeed? And do we want them to avoid the outcomes that we know will likely happen if we don't let them succeed? So do we want them to have a stable job? Do we want them to go on and be an active and contributing member of our society? And these are the sort of things that robust college support programs do for young people in foster care who have just left foster care. They face a whole level of challenges that other kids just don't face, right? If a 19-year-old misses a car payment, they have parents to go to. They have a very good likelihood that they're not going to lose that car. And you think for a minute, losing that car isn't just about the convenience of not having a car. It may be the actual ability to hold a job. Or if they miss a month on rent, right, they lose their apartment. There are any number of things that are not catastrophic for other young people that are everyday problems, but in fact, for a young person who has entered the world on their own with no adult in their lives, are catastrophic for them after they've worked so hard to get as far as they do. And I will say, in my view, we owe it to them to allow them to succeed.
Okay, thank you. So Olivia or Abby, either or both of you, I wonder if anything in this description sounds familiar. Maybe tell us a little bit about your own experiences, because I'm sure everyone has their own story. So how did you decide to go to college? What were some of the challenges that you had?
For me, I think I was really grateful to have a lot of people at school that I would rely on in order to give me resources to talk about colleges and what that would look like for myself versus other students around me. And so I'm grateful for that opportunity and how it brought me to college. And once I got to college, it was a whole different view on how I would have to take that on versus, you know, one of my roommates who has that familial support. And so for myself, I think what really resonates with me that Andrew talked about were the financial burdens that you don't even think about is that, you know, parking ticket that you got or tuition that you ended up having to pay for, even though you, you know, are told foster youth have free education. It doesn't end up being true, even with zero estimated family contribution. And so just trying to balance all of that with your education on top of it became really real for me. But definitely an area where Fostering Success was able to help out, and having many conversations in the financial aid office or with teachers to discuss, you know, whatever we had to at the point, at that moment. So it was difficult. There's so many memories where I, you know, I turned to my one roommate who's going home and has the opportunity to get $20 for gas or going home to celebrate with the holidays. It definitely could be alienating, but was at least made possible with me and definitely through FS.
Okay. Abby, do you have something that you could add to that?
I absolutely mirror and resonate with everything Olivia said. There's a lot of things that people don't think about, obviously financially, but there's that huge emotional impact. Not just me, but with the students that I've worked with, listened to their stories, I've often heard the, you know, overall resignation of, like Olivia had mentioned, I wish that I had family to go home to for, you know, this holiday, or, you know, I wish that I could have done this family activity with them, when I'm hearing my friends or my roommates talk about their family vacations. And I mean, there's just those little things, like Olivia mentioned, parking tickets. I remember not all of my college applications were free. Some of them were through some talking that I did with my high school, but a lot of them did cost money. And that influenced me a lot where I wanted to go to school, because I ended up not applying or finishing a bunch of applications because I didn't want to pay and I couldn't pay the fees that they were asking me to. So then that's another barrier that we're putting on these kids to prevent them from going into higher education, and their graduation rate is, I mean, astronomically low to begin with. So we're looking at the end goal, but why not look at how, you know, how hard is it to get in? Like, it's hard. And obviously we know trauma and a lot of these, you know, things coming into foster care is not easy. It's a relatively traumatic experience for youth that are involved. They could have been doing great in school or maybe not, and just not have the resources to really excel and push themselves out of that. And I just, I really, my importance, and obviously the financials are a big part of it because we know how much it costs. I just got my financial aid letter back for my master's program, and I was like, wow, like, I'm going to have to pay a decent amount out of pocket. Like, I can't even imagine trying to do this when I was in school, because I didn't really have to until I was in my junior, senior year. And I can't imagine that for other students that were in my position. So, yeah, that's where FS really did step in for me and why these programs are just so important.
Right. And so just as a reminder, FS, because you both referenced it, stands for Fostering Success. That's a UW system program to help foster youth succeed in college. Andrea, I want to go back to you. What are some of the reasons why we should want foster youth to go to college? What are the benefits to them, to other students and society? I mean, why not just go directly into the workforce, for example?
Well, certainly some young people should go directly into the workforce. That's their choice. And that can be fulfilling, and that is respected. And they have every right to do that and to live a fulfilling life in that way. The only thing that we're asking is that they have that choice, like every young person has. So we need to decide if we're going to actually give them the choice that other young people, other kids, if you excuse me, have. And I thought that really, you know, Abby brought up a very good point, and it's very small, but, you know, that $60 fee to apply. Now, 60 bucks is not a lot of money to most of us, but if you're living in a group home and you don't have a job and you don't have an allowance, 60 bucks is everything. 60 bucks might as well be 600 bucks. Because both of them are equally unattainable. And so if we go ahead and support youth, we end up, and we have young people like Abby and Olivia, people who have gone ahead and been allowed to meet that American dream, to actually fulfill that promise that we say is out there if you try. And to deny that is not who we are. We are built on the idea that if you try hard enough, if you work hard enough, you will be rewarded for that effort and that trying. And that's all that we're asking.
Okay, thank you. What, and this again, Olivia or Abby, you could answer, what are some things about college that are new or challenging to foster youth in ways that they just weren't for your college peers, your roommates, or whoever else you encountered?
I think financially is just the resounding word that comes to mind as far as challenges that we'd face. I even moving, I think that was one of the most profound moments where I kind of felt like I was by myself in this, was it was the move out of dorms into our own housing to junior year. You don't have any more dorm housing. And there's also this little buffer in between that time frame where you aren't living in the dorms anymore and where you're waiting to move into a new lease into our junior year, it was for us. And it was just trying to find out where I was going to go, where I was going to put my stuff, and how I was going to get it there. That was one of those moments where I was like, okay, this is different than my peers who all go home at this moment and their mom and dad help pick things up and bring it to a new place and establish themselves. Where it's even the buffer time where you really feel that there's a difference between yourself who has this lived experience versus someone who's experiencing it normally. I'm grateful for all the hardships it definitely brought me, but yeah, that's probably one of the most profound moments when just looking around in my dorm room, like, okay, we're going to have to figure this one out.
Mm-hmm. So is there anyone, Abby, maybe you can answer this one. You talked about the cost of applying to college. Did you have any help with those college applications? Like, did you have a high school counselor that helped you out? Are there any other parts of this process that you found especially challenging?
So for me, I did get connected. I had a very good relationship with my counselor. I went to a school where it was definitely, you know, the counselors were aware of who in their school were potentially foster youth or an out-of-home placement or might need that additional support, but obviously not every high school in, you know, Wisconsin or even nationally can support that kind of one-on-one outreach. So I was connected with my counselor, but I was also connected with a program that connected me to a Brighter Star scholarship, but that has very, very strict criteria to even qualify for it. Like, I qualified for it, but Olivia wouldn't have qualified because of when she was put into foster care. And that's something where, you know, because of my connections with them, because I only qualified for that, I had additional help with that. Although it was more of a, okay, you want to go to college, that's great. Here's what you kind of have to do. I don't remember ever getting help to do my application, other than maybe a couple times where I might have asked, like, my teacher a question or something, because, like, I mean, I assume all my teachers had went to school, which is true. But the applying, I never toured any school, because how are you going to get there? You know, I didn't want to burden my foster parents at the time driving me all over Wisconsin, knowing how much they got paid to keep me at their residence. I know they probably would have looking back, but I just wasn't in that, you know, headspace to really ask. And just the emotional and mental preparedness of, like, okay, I have to do this on top of my homework and other things, right? I feel like more traditional students, while they are expected to do that, you know, they're expected to, you know, go to class, do their extracurriculars, do their homework, etc. They do have a lot of support in that, by outside parents. And I was pretty much like, I'd get off of school, I would go to work, and then I'd get home at, you know, 8, 9, maybe even 10, and finish up my applications for school, and then wake up at 6 in the morning. So it was a lot of, like, that juggle, that life balance that I was really thrown into. And I was just so nervous of, like, rejection. And that's something that a lot of foster kids just face in general, even in the system. So then imagine you're applying for colleges, and then you get rejected to, like, one of your top picks. And they don't ever tell you why. And then you'd face that rejection previously in your life, and then for some, that's it. Like, that rejection from one school might be the reason why they don't want to go. And that's not saying that some colleges don't have a reason to reject people. But, you know, those emotional and mental and, you know, social strains during that time, you know, those periods, right? Right before you're about to graduate high school and right before you're about to start college are huge. And I don't think people really take into consideration how different it is for a foster youth coming out of care versus a traditional normal student.
Okay, thank you for that, Abby. Just a quick reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD-HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So I'm going to ask a question that I think is a little selfish on my part, but since I am a college professor and I teach future teachers, I wonder if you could offer some advice. What do you think teachers should know about the needs of foster youth during their K-12 years? And this could go to any of you.
I'll chime in. I think that what is really important for teachers to know is they actually may not know who the young person is and what their background is. And so there are many things that are just very ordinary, or everyday, that may have a particular effect on this young person who spent their childhood in foster care and the one who didn't. And I use an example. I'll use this example because I know it used to happen in Wisconsin. We'd like you to create a family tree. Now, that is a very, you know, pretty easy thing for a kid who grew up in a traditional family. Simply gives a phone call to mom and dad, their family pictures on the walls, they grew up with that family, they can do that. Ask someone who never had a family. Ask someone who was never told where their grandparents are. Ask someone who was separated from their brothers and sisters what happened to them. It becomes enormously complicated to do those sort of things. I'd also say, I will use a personal example with this. When I was at Wesleyan, I had a professor who I told that I'd fallen behind in school. I was terribly behind. Well, the next week I found that I was sitting in the dean's office. Now, the dean was concerned, and the dean's solution for it was, well, you know, you seem to be having trouble here in your freshman year, so why don't you take next semester off? Now, that dean had no idea what she was actually doing, and what that teacher had no idea what they were actually doing. And that was, they were threatening an 18-year-old with homelessness because he couldn't keep up with his reading. And those are the sorts of things that we just don't know.
Right. That's really helpful advice. I think one of the things I wonder for teachers in the K through 12 years, they probably aren't even necessarily aware of the status of foster youth in their classrooms. Do either of you have any thoughts on that, Abby or Olivia? Did your teachers know, or would it have been helpful if they did? I don't know.
I think in my situation, I lived in a group home, and we only had one group home in our city at that time. So it was kind of like they kind of knew by who hung out with who may have been placed in that specific group home. And then it was obviously assumed from there, and especially like if you had a kid who was there 1 year, out the next, maybe back the next year, there was that assumption. I feel like obviously the counselors and higher administration did know. I had been called into the office once or twice maybe, but I had talked to an assistant principal at the time, and he had kind of told me that he wasn't going to be as harsh on me for a consequence because he knew my situation. He knew where I was coming from. And that leniency didn't make me into a, you know, worse person. That slap on the wrist didn't, you know, I don't know, make me want to do worse. It actually made me sit there and be like, wow, he actually is taking the time to understand where I'm coming from. I feel every foster youth is different because not every person who's in out of home care is a foster youth. Pardon me. They might just be placed under a guardianship, kinship placement. They might just not be living with their parents, but they might be living with family with the hope of reunification, but there still might be issues there that might be causing them to go, you know, behind or struggling, like Andrew had mentioned. And obviously up to the comfort level of the individual, they should be informed and involved in this process. And with their permission, it may be helpful for a teacher that they trust, or, you know, a couple faculty to be like, you know, they know, especially going into their senior, junior year, where those formative years really do shape potentially college for them, if that's what they're interested in doing, they might need some extra support right now. If you're able to do that, by all means, because obviously I know educators, you know, don't get enough credit for what they do. They're asked a lot. But that is just one thing. Like, I remember I was a TA for one of my English teachers, and just being her TA, like, she knew my situation, and I was a great student in her class, but she 100% would have vouched for me if I ever fell behind anywhere else, and would have graciously went out of her way to help me catch up. And we have educators like that, I know, all over Wisconsin and all over the U.S. So.
Okay. Thank you, Abby. So just jumping back into the college experience, Olivia, maybe you can tell us, how can college professors support their students who are, you know, alumni of the foster system or whatever status they might have that's not a traditional one?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the expectation isn't just to know off the bat, and it's not like a writing on the forehead that you can just detect that someone has been through what they've been through, but just having the openness with your mind and your heart to say, yeah, you have different circumstances that may make it difficult to turn in X assignment by this time because they're working or because of whatever situation that they're going through that they have to take care of typically by themselves. Just having the openness to say you are understanding, like in Abby's situation, I think goes an extremely long way. And then taking it a step further, I know that at SOUT, we had different education opportunities that you could visit and learn and hear from the students and get their perspective in order to help put yourself in their shoes, for lack of a better term, to just understand how their life is throughout university if you just have a different background yourself. So understanding and then further education on it.
Okay, thanks very much for that. So on our previous programs on this topic, we discussed fostering success, and Abby and Olivia, you've done a really good job so far of just kind of representing how supportive that is. And that has been instituted at many of the UW campuses, but not all of them. I know Andrew also is, I don't know if you're a participant or aware of, I don't know how we would say, advocate for a program called Guardian Scholars, and we don't have that currently within the UW system, but tell us a little bit about what that is and how it might be helpful for students in this situation.
Absolutely. So I have worked with young people who are members of Guardian Scholars programs, and I've actually helped set up Guardian Scholars programs at universities and colleges. Guardian Scholars programs is a general name. They're called different things in different campuses. But generally what they refer to is a place with youth who've had experienced foster care can go to receive the support that they need. To put that in the concrete, that means that they can go to a place where, to go to Olivia's question of, I don't have a place to stay for the summer and I can't stay in the dorm. Will you help me? And a Guardian Scholars program can go ahead and coordinate with a community provider and find that place for Olivia to live. Or, I just got a $25 ticket. I have no way to pay for that. They can go ahead and they can support that. The other thing that I would say is one of the greatest issues, and I think that I can say this is a former foster youth, and I don't want to speak too much for Olivia and Abby, but I'm guessing that there are a lot of things going on inside. There's a lot of emotion going on inside that you're still trying to process at 18. And that kind of support doesn't exist at community colleges, or in the community normally, and at universities, and Guardian Scholars do that. So they go ahead and they will help with mental health needs. They'll go ahead and help with a bout of depression. They'll go ahead and help answering, you know, a question. Hey, you know, my mom just came back into my life. I don't know what to do. Or I really want to reach out to my siblings, but they need help. What should I do? These are all very, very basic, very traumatizing in some way, but also very wonderful places, but they need that help to navigate. If I could just, I just want to say one thing about what Abby said about pre-18, and I really did appreciate what she had to say. I'll tell you, imagine an 8-year-old whose living terror is that when he returns his report card to his third grade teacher, she's going to just very absently ask in front of the entire class, why is the name on this report card different than your own last name? And that 8-year-old is then going to be expected to answer why this has happened, who the people he lives with are, why he lives there, to go through the most intimate trauma, the most intimate circumstances that no other child would ever ask to go through. Or, in the case of Abby mentioned a few little things. Now, what would happen if a 16-year-old gets suspended? In foster care, that 16-year-old very may likely lose their home. They very may likely be moved on to another group home. They very may likely lose their foster care placement. That does not happen generally to our own children. And so we have to take a look also at what they've gone through, how they survived that, and how they've navigated it, and then knowing that by the time they reach 19, those experiences have not ended. Those years of managing that are not over, and they will certainly extend out through the entirety of their college career, and quite frankly, well beyond that. And that's what Guardian Scholars programs take care of.
I think an interesting part of what you just said, Andrew, makes me think about the people who've navigated this, including all three of you, come through. If you get all the way through college, and not to mention high school, with those kinds of challenges, your problem solving and people skills are so far beyond the average person. Like, you've been able to solve problems that none of us even have ever imagined, let alone, you know, gotten through. And it's not that something I'd ever wish on someone, but it, I would think for anyone thinking about who you'd want as a coworker or an employee or a grad student or whatever, that this would be something to really take into account. So, you know, well done. Let me just start, do a quick reintroduction again, and then we're getting close to the end, so we have a few more things to cover. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTV.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So last fall, in October, UW-Eau Claire held an event organized by Fostering Success advocate Gail Menzel, an education imperative for Wisconsin's foster, homeless, orphaned youth with Andrew Bridge. And Andrew, you were there in person and spoke, and I believe both of you, Olivia and Abby, were on the panel, yes? I actually watched it streaming, and then I watched it again a couple days ago. So for Abby and Olivia, you know, what do you remember from that event last fall, and sort of how has your life changed, or, you know, what do you think about when you think back on that event? Let's start maybe with Olivia.
I was not on the panel, but I was helping out at the event. And so from my point of view, I mean, it was just amazing to hear Andrew speak. I think everyone in the room was completely captivated when they were listening to his story. And it just goes to show that listening to people's backgrounds and stories and helping understand what they have gone through can maybe open some folks' eyes. It was at the university. And with Abby and everyone who spoke at the panel, I think it just goes to show a great point of view of what students can go through and what's not a traditional route.
I'm going to add 100%. I agree with Olivia in terms of Andrew. He is an amazing, phenomenal speaker. I wish I could speak as eloquently as he does in my day-to-day life. However, I will say personalizing stories, because when we talk about, you know, foster youth and putting money towards foster youth and, you know, investing in their education and their future, we say it in a way, right, of just making them out to be this foreign thing or this thing that's just on paper. But when we start to put stories, when we start to put that real human connection to these stories, that's when we see the most, I feel, you know, action and people wanting to do something. I had multiple people come up to me after the event, you know, like, wow, like, I never saw this that way. I never thought about this that way. You know, you went through XYZ so much and ended up like this. Like, that is, you know, crazy for me to think about. And for a lot of people, it is, until they are able to, you know, like Olivia had hinted at earlier, with, you know, helping and understanding, educating yourself, right? And being willing to accept, you know, these stories as things that happen and things that, with the right help and support and resources for these youth, can not just be struggles, right? They can be the building blocks for future successes, because I'm a huge believer, and obviously the struggles that I went through, while in the moment were absolutely terrible, and I will say that, really did help me get to where I am now, where I can help people, you know, be better, and I can help people not continue to do things that they're not supposed to do, because I understand having to make difficult situations and what that might look like. So I 100%, everything Olivia said, true.
Okay. Well, you've just set us up perfectly, Abby, because I have a question here at the end. It's actually, you can choose either one of these things, because I had another question I wanted to ask as well. But one of them is, for each of you, what are the next steps for advocacy work for helping foster youth to enter and complete college? Do you have a special thing you're working on other than, you know, Abby, you're new to the workforce, and I know it sounds like you're going to grad school, but do you have any other plans for kind of helping to continue this work in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I will be doing advocacy work the rest of my life. I just was on a panel that was hosted by the Department of Children and Families, which was also in part hosted by an organization called Think of Us. I was one of the lived experts. I was not just placed in foster care. I also had a couple kinship placements, and I advocated for kinship placement versus immediate foster care, right? When a child enters foster care, we often put them right into a foster care home instead of looking at guardianship alternatives within a family or a like family environment. And just statistically speaking and evidence-based, we've found that that's not right and not the best fit. So I got to speak to a room full of social workers from the surrounding counties that I live in about that. I'm going to be at the next Fostering Success Camp. I was graciously invited back by FS, even though I've graduated. And I'm very excited about that. I will be continuing to share my story and doing any advocacy that I can for as long as I can. This is something that I hold very, very deeply to myself. And, you know, it's something that made me into me. And I, you know, hope that anything that I can do can help future students and people who are just like me, you know, get the help and support that they need, but also bring awareness and attention to it. So we can hopefully lobby. And, you know, I'm also part of Youth Advisory Council, which they do go down to Madison. I'm still yet to go on one of those trips, but I do want to, where they go and lobby for the importance of giving state funding to programs like TRIO, like Fostering Success, and other, you know, programs that support foster youth. So that's my plan.
Okay. Olivia?
I don't have anything necessarily teed up like Abby. I mean, she is absolutely amazing. I wish I could be half of what she is. Same with Andrew. They both inspire me to do so much more in the community. And I think who empowers me, and we've spoke about her a few times, is Gail. She's the one who got me connected with you the first time that we had spoke. And so any advocacy opportunities that I can take on, I will definitely do it. I'm not afraid to share my story as I once was. So we'll see. We'll see on what next I get connected with.
Okay. And then, of course, Andrew, what are your current projects? I know this is pretty much your life's work on some level, but, you know, I know you've written books. Tell us what you're working on.
So I continue to serve on the Arizona Foster Care Review Board, which means I advise the Superior Court on individual children's cases. And that's very important to me. And it means hopefully making a difference in an individual's child's life. I also regularly consult with departments, foundations, and providers. I am working on another book. And I just want to say two other things. One, I want to mention Gail Metzl because she's so important. And I think you can hear and see that in both Olivia, Abby, and if you meet with any of the students she's worked with, you know that. But I also want to say you can hear in both Olivia and Abby the eloquence and the kindness and the wisdom that they have. And that's so, so important. You can edit this out, but there is one thing that I would just, if it works, fine. What I would like to say is, and what I talk about is debt. And what I ask is people who are listening, people who are adults, imagine how they consider debt. They go into credit card debt. Well, they get something. They can at least say, well, I got that fridge with that credit card debt. I got that car with that credit card debt. I got those clothes. I got something that I needed. For a young person who has to leave college because they can't afford it, they literally get nothing but debt. There's nothing to show for it, other than perhaps an explanation of why did you leave? Why did you drop out? And then what we ask is, well, why don't you go back and get some more debt? And so it's, again, it goes to this sense of fundamental fairness. And I would also say to universities and colleges, we know the risks. We know that only 5% of all foster children will graduate compared to 64%. And so universities and colleges ought to take an active role in part of recognize their role in this problem and solving it. And it's important. It's a two-way street.
I have no reason to edit that out. That was very important. So thank you for sharing that. I think we all need to hear that kind of honesty because it is a real issue. And obviously a greater issue for students that come with more challenges, but it is a huge problem. I interviewed somebody a few years ago who wrote a book about this issue, about college dropout and debt. So I'm glad that you brought it up. So just as we're about to finish up, if listeners have been inspired by this program, how do you think they can help in ways large and small? So Abby, do you want to start? What do you think listeners to the program could do?
I mean, I feel like small is truthfully looking into what's in their community. If there's anything coming up like the education imperative that Andrew, Olivia, and I were a part of, that was free. Anyone could have came to that. Educating yourself, whether it's through books, Andrew's books are amazing, highly recommend them. And other stories, right? Personalizing it for yourself. connecting yourself to these stories and understanding them. I always say the most impactful is something that just means the most to you. And that obviously the biggest way that anyone could help any foster student is, I don't know, be a placement, but foster care licensing is extremely hard. So I'm not going to be unrealistic. I've seen just through social media, there are people who specifically reach out to some of these FS programs. They're like, hey, I'm someone who's an empty nester. I get really, really lonely around the holidays. All my family lives way, way away. I want to host a big dinner. Work with them. Volunteer. FS programs will literally help you figure out what you want to do. And they're not the only ones. Any DHS, really everywhere. There's such a need for community right now. There's such a need for just support of our youth in general. And honestly, just educating yourself and knowing where your FS are and supporting the overall branching funding of FS, which I believe is TRIO, because I know that has been challenged a bit recently in the political sphere, and not to get political, but just to be honest, without that TRIO funding, a lot of our FS would be shut down in our campuses. So that is something that I've been working on lobbying for, is keeping our TRIO funding. Nothing's happened yet, thank goodness. But yeah, just staying informed and educated and doing what you can.
Hey, and Olivia, a couple words?
Yeah, I mean, they've hit it right on the head. I think the best thing you can do is just educate yourself and open your heart. I think just there's probably a lot more people around you that have gone through so much more than you can imagine. And of course, like I said, it's not written on your forehead, but it's something that if you educate yourself and immerse yourself in and let everybody know that they're welcome and accepted no matter how they come, I think is the best thing that you can do for FS and truly everyone around you.
In the service of educating ourselves, Andrew, if you could tell us the titles of your books, and then I'll link to them in the show notes.
My most recent book is called The Child Catcher, and it's about the very first lawsuit that I worked on representing children in Alabama psychiatric hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
My original book, my first book, is Hope's Boy, and that is about me growing up with my mom as she developed paranoid schizophrenia and my entry into the foster care system.
Okay. And then do you have anything to add to what Abby and Olivia just said?
Well, I think it really works on what they both said, and that is to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
The next time you walk into a grocery store, ask the assistant manager, the manager, hey, do you provide summer jobs for foster youth? Or the next time you drop your child off in their third grade class, ask their teacher, are there many foster children who attend this school? Or to go ahead and go to college. I believe Abby mentioned, or maybe it was Olivia, I apologize, but not having a chance to do that college tour. I didn't have a chance to do that college tour. But when you do, and you're standing here with your child, ask that guide, how many foster children go here and what do you do for them? And you will be doing so much good in that last example, because that college guide will need to have an answer to that question and will go and ask someone else. And that will go, and there's a whole cascade of things that will help. And so we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for talking with me about it. Andrew Bridge, Olivia Johnston, Abby Austin, thank you so much for spending this time with me. And thank you, listeners, also. You have been listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us this coming Saturday morning at 11:15 for the rebroadcast of the WGTD Radio Theater's The Enigma Covenant, a World War II thriller about how the British Navy captured the German Enigma machine. Support for the Radio Theater comes from the Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation, on the web at brownoshipfoundation.org. The WGTD Radio Theater, this coming Saturday morning at 11:15.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. We're going to be talking about the disturbing practice of redlining, a means by which neighborhoods across the country have been racially